Clayton. Sean Clayton.
Hey, Mom! I'm done with my segment!
This is the Coors Light Cold Hard Facts with John Clayton.
Brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light, Washington's most refreshing beer.
Now, here's a six-pack of questions.
Professor, have we gotten to the bottom of Earl Thomas's Instagram?
Okay. And? Oh, I think when it comes, I thought you were making a statement.
No, it's more of a question. Okay. I felt kind of dirty. Like, honestly, like sitting there trying to sift through all the hashtags and the emojis and smiley face with star eyes. What does that mean? Hashtag long body? And apparently that has something to do with Longhorn football and him saying America's team, straight truth. Should we read anything into that?
Yep. And this is why I kept saying that there's no way that they can offer him a contract, because they got to see if he's in or out on this team. A text like that, a message like that says he's out. And so it's the waiting game. And of course, the Seahawks have control of this. They may not be able to come out with a great result, because more than likely they're going to have to trade him, and they're not going to get great value, maybe a fourth or a third or something like that. And so it's kind of the waiting game. And I guess they can handle it not in a nasty way, because I think he's meant too much to this organization, but they certainly can handle it in a way that goes somewhat the way they would want it to go. And so if you do have him hold out all the way through training camp, I mean, there's going to be fine money that's going to subtract what's there. If you then get the right type of offer, because injuries do happen. I mean, I think right now you take the position, particularly with the way he's now starting to handle it. It's like, okay, I'm holding out. I want to be a Cowboy. He tweets this out that he wants to be a Cowboy. He's not saying he wants to be a Seahawk. And so at the right point sometime in late August, then you make the trade to Dallas or a team that may lose a free safety.
Yeah, and John, Danny and Jim both pointed this out. It's not making you want to sign him or give him money, right? If he continues to make these kinds of comments, I feel like he's kind of burning a bridge that might actually still be there, because it's one of those things. It just doesn't inspire people. It's not going to inspire someone to pay you if you're continuing to drop hints about another team.
Well, I mean, it's like, why would you want to pay somebody if he doesn't really want to be here?
Right.
I mean, it's like, okay, he hasn't formally, to our knowledge, asked for a trade, but he's done it publicly, which is maybe the worst way to do it. Turning your back on your teammates, turning your back on the people that brought you into the league. And, at times the relationships do end. I mean, that just happens. And it looks like it's heading in that direction. Sad to say, but, now where I thought before it was 50-50, now it's like, 0.5, 99.5 that he's not going to be here.
Mm. Wow. So what's the Seahawks probably, want a first or a second, but what's realistic with what they want and what they can get?
I think realistic could be a third. More likely a fourth. Maybe you can come up with some kind of a convoluted package where you swap positions and rounds and stuff like that. But the pure value is just not going to be there. And it's sad, because he's such a great player. I mean, again, when you start to look, and I think this is a great exercise to be able to do this. I mean, I still go back to that USA Today article that did say that the Legion of Boom was the greatest secondary in NFL history. And then you start to look at all the other ones that he documented, and no secondary was able to stay together longer than 9 years. And usually the breakup point was somewhere between 6 and 8. And so now you're at that 7 and 8 year mark for the Legion of Boom, and it's all broken up. And so it's time to move on, and it's time to, again, you'd love to be able to have Earl Thomas. I mean, he can go to Dallas and continue to have a Hall of Fame type of career, but at some point, and this is the point right now, he doesn't appear to want to be here. And again, we now start to know this.
Yeah, I know it's business, John, and you need to let personal feelings out of it, but just because he wants to go to Dallas, I wouldn't send him to Dallas.
No,
at this point. And you talked, and earlier we've been joking, or at least I have, about sending him to Cleveland. And I'm not really joking about it anymore, but if I remember right, you said Cleveland is a possible landing spot.
Yeah, because, I mean, again, it depends on what they really think of Quentin Rollins, the cornerback they picked up in the trade for DeShone Kizer. They have him as the free safety, but John Dorsey and John Snyder have a great relationship. It's one of the many great relationships. And so, if you make some kind of a deal with the Cleveland Browns, I mean, sure. I mean, they picked up Randall, but again, you'd rather have Thomas. And John Dorsey enjoys the play of a great safety. I mean, they have Eric Berry, who is there at Kansas City, both coming up the same year as Earl Thomas. And so I would have to think that, it might be a consideration, maybe not immediately, but if under the right circumstances, maybe they can work something out.
John, does this make you wonder if the Seahawks have kept guys too long? And by that, I mean this. You look at Michael Bennett, certainly Richard Sherman, now Earl Thomas. Would Seattle have been better served of before it got to this point where guys wanted to be elsewhere or guys wanted new contract adjustments? Would they have been better served by moving guys before it got to this point?
No. They were better served to do it the way that they did it. And the reason I say that is that you still want to take that one chance. I mean, you look at the roster last year, and, you know, I thought, and I don't know, again, it didn't play that way, but I thought it was the second most talented roster in the Pete Carroll era. Maybe, I think it was maybe a little bit better, maybe not. Maybe you can say it was third, but clearly 213 was the best team, 214 versus the last year's team. But when you're talking about eight Pro Bowl caliber guys, eight Pro Bowl players starting on defense, that's pretty important. And then, of course, you know, they have the three on offense and then picked up Dwayne Brown. I mean, they had a total of 15 Pro Bowl players on that team. And now, again, two of them were kind of washes in Eddie Lacy and Blair Walsh. They had been to the Pro Bowl, and I think if they were making a second trip to the Pro Bowl, they certainly could have paid for the flight and, you know, get tickets and be able to buy a seat and get in there the way that they played last year. But, you know, that's a lot of talent. And so, because, you know, I was breaking it down the other day to see, because I know Brock wanted me to do a little worksheet type of thing on, you know, when was the last time you saw this many Pro Bowl players leave a team? And what I came up with was the 2013 to 2014 San Francisco 49ers. That team had 16 Pro Bowlers. They had 17 2 years before that. 16 players who have been to the Pro Bowl, they ended up losing 9. They got down to 7, but where the difference is, they just didn't have much left on that 49er team. This team still has enough talent left to still make a wild card playoff run or still have a challenge for the playoffs. So there's where the difference is. But, hey, it's not going to be the same. But, no, I think they owed it to this team and the players on this team to take one more run at it. They didn't make it. Now you break it up.
John, next time I want you to tell Brock to do his own worksheet. Okay, he's asking you to do the worksheet.
Well, no, he knows I'm always doing. But it was funny because he asked me that question, and I had actually been working on that.
Oh, okay. Now, who were some of the names from that? Refresh my memory. Was like
Well, remember, it was kind of the big retirement year. You know, that was, you know, they had Dante Whitner. They ended up letting him go right before the start of the next year's regular season. They traded Vernon Davis.
Right.
Patrick Willis retired. Justin Smith retired. I mean, yeah. You go through that whole list. I mean, Carlos Rogers didn't come back. You know, one of the great success stories for the 49ers that put them over the top is here they come out of the lockout. And free agency starts briefly, and they hit on three players. I mean, they hit on Carlos Rogers, a cornerback, and Dante Whitner. I mean, you know, they did what the Seahawks did back in 2013 in getting Bennett and Averill and just, you know, really loaded that team up. And so then it got to the point where there were 17 Pro Bowl players, both in 11, 12, and 13. And then, of course, it got down to 16. And then in 14, it drops all the way down to 7. And then they were out of it. They went from 8-8 the 1 year down to 5-11 the next year.
All right, John, you're always all about all things Hall of Fame. What does this mean, the Hall of Fame ceremony? How is this going to be different, not individually mentioning Terrell Owens?
Well, it's different because there's never been a player that they've not mentioned because there's never been a player that decided not to show up. And so what Joe Horrigan said on his show on Sirius Radio was that the decision was that you know, they're going to he'll be in pictures, you know, he'll be pictured as a Hall of Famer, but I mean there's not going to be any mention of his name, which I think is the fair thing to do, because T.O.'s taken the silly tack that he's going to have his speech before all the other speeches. And so it's like, okay. And I would imagine that they're not going to ever invite him back unless he starts to pay his way to come back. And so he's on the outside looking in, even though he's a Hall of Famer. That's his decision. I think it's the right decision by the Pro Football Hall of Fame to handle it that way. What they're going to do is Saturday afternoon, right when he starts doing his speech, they're going to go in a box, probably in the slow mail delivery, put the yellow jacket in an envelope and send it.
Not send it today.
Snail mail.
Well, it's too bad too, John, because I've been back there for that for it was for Elway, but there's a parade, mm-hmm. right, where they're right. all in the car. Then there's like a you know, a big ceremony at night where they introduce them, and then the thing that I understand isn't there there's like a lunch or something where
it's on Friday, yeah.
Yeah, and don't they? It's just Only Hall of Famers.
Only Hall
that's
of Famers.
It. And, yeah. and everybody leaves the room, and it's just those guys in there. And that's got to be something. No, I've heard that that's really special.
No, it is. And it's funny because, you know, I'm now getting back to those. I can't really attend the lunch this year as I couldn't last year because I'll be doing my show. And so that's out of the but I've been to one of them, and it was fantastic. And that's when the guys get up. They get so emotional about what the Hall of Fame and getting into the Hall of Fame has meant to them, and they get, and that's where you'll hear a Harry Carson. And did you see the TO even tried to take a media shot using Harry Carson's name? It's like, oh, look at Harry Carson. He says he doesn't, if he got elected, he wouldn't even show up, and they ended up voting him in anyways. Me, they're making such a big deal because, you know, they're against me in the media.
That's weird.
Yeah, that is weird. Yeah, because it has nothing to do with the media at this point. I mean, no. he got in, and it's about
it's
the whole
thing. It's 48 voters, including two players.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, the two players in the room are James Lofton and Dan Fouts.
John, Bill Barnwell from ESPN.com, you see this, where he ranks running back, wide receiver, tight end groups in the NFL, and he's got the Jets, number 32, the worst in the league, right? Miami, 31, Dallas, 30, Buffalo, 29. And he has the Seattle Seahawks, John, at number 28. Pretty close to the bottom there. Do you agree with him?
No. I mean, I think it's better than he's putting it. But again, so if you're looking at it in cold numbers, I mean, that's what you're going to come up with. I mean, you're talking about an offense that now doesn't have its number two target in Jimmy Graham. He's gone. I mean, you've got running backs that are not proven in Carson and Rashad Penny. You can see that. I mean, you can see that he's not buying into Tyler Lockett, which is understandable. I mean, Tyler needs to show more this year. He was at 75% last year and wasn't necessarily the starter. It was Paul Richardson. So you take that, and I can see that, you know, and Bill does a great job using analytical tools and all that stuff. I mean, you know, on paper, it looks like that. But again, where I look at the and of course, you take into account the offensive line, but I do think it's better because I'll still contend it's a deep running back group. Even though they did not produce the last 2 years, I still think the backfield is deep enough that Alex Collins goes from the fifth running back in training camp to being the 973-yard rusher for the Baltimore Ravens.
I say great. I think it's awesome if we go back to underestimating Seattle's offense. Like, Seattle's offense has been, Dave, you pointed this out yesterday, like all of the years where they rank in yardage and scoring, like they're pretty, the lowest they've been is 18th in total offense since Russell Wilson became the quarterback.
And that was the Super Bowl year.
Right. Like the
2013.
Let's go back to thinking that Seattle has nothing on the offensive side of the football, because I think that would, they'll go back to winning more games.
Well, and I went back and I looked at the numbers, on rushing, and clearly, I mean, it was horrible. I mean, you know, if Chris Carson would have had, you know, the rest of the season, he would have had probably 950 to 1,000 yards. I think he was that good. Had a 95-yard game early, and he was going to be fine.
And he was getting better.
And he was getting better. Yeah. So it's like, okay. Despite that, they gained, you know, a total of 1,600 yards, and of course, the bad part about it is that 380 or so are by Russell Wilson. But now flip the switch. I mean, you know, I know that Danny's buddies over at Pro Football Focus think there's going to be a 950-yard season for Rashard Penny. So if they can put together, you know, again, I kind of use the Alvin Kamara, Mark Ingram model, where they went for about 850 to 1,900 yards total rushing, and this is with an immobile quarterback, and they end up getting like a plus 140 in their points differential, and you can see they went to 11 wins. Okay, so if you can get maybe 80% of that out of the two running backs, let's say that you get 950, you know, out of Chris Carson, and you can get, about 400 from Rashard Penny. I mean, you know that Mike Davis or the other running back, C.J. Procise, is going to get something. Then you're back to 2,000, and now you're back up, if your defense plays well, to that 10-win level, maybe, you know, at the most 11. But, I mean, you can get that metric going if you can get the running game going.
Well, John, this might be a crazy question. I don't even know why I'm prefacing it like that, because I ask all kinds of crazy questions. But Baldwin's a sure thing as a good, solid number one in the NFL. Mm-hmm. But what if you have 2, 3, and 4 receivers that are below average, which is possible this year? How much will that hurt the running game?
I think, well, the running game is going to help the passing game. But, you know, what I look at is that what was Paul Richardson really before last year? It was kind of an unknown. Yeah. Okay. There, I mean, and he had fallen behind Tyler Lockett. Well, Lockett, and I don't know if it was 75%. That's his number. But he said he was playing at 75%. Now you get 100% of Tyler Lockett, who was, you know, at least theoretically better than Paul Richardson the year before. And so I think he can go from like 40 to 60 catches, and I think that could be an improvement. And then the other guys can press to see where they're going to go. You have no idea what you have in Brandon Marshall, but if he can come through as a big receiver, you know, that opens up things in the red zone. It opens up things that they used to have with Jimmy Graham. And don't discount what they might be able to get out of Ed Dixon. I know Ed Dixon has been a backup his entire career because he's been behind, you know, Ed Olson and Carolina, and also behind Dennis Pitta in Baltimore. He's been behind those two guys, but when he's had a chance, he's had a 50 catch season. So I think that, you know, he can be a little bit more of a factor. He's not the equal of Jimmy Graham, no question about that, but I think they can do okay with the passing game.
Yeah, you know what, John, I'm glad you brought up Dixon, because man, everybody's sort of panning that pick, and you know, you had Jimmy Graham, but he hadn't been targeted. I mean, you look at some of these years where he has 10 catches. Well, he was only targeted 17 times.
Mm-hmm.
17 catches in 2015 when they were really successful. He was only targeted 26 times. So, and the guy can catch, right? It's just that he wasn't being used that way. He was being used as a blocker in Carolina. And I think he's going to be one of those guys. I think he's been discounted by a lot of people. And I feel like this guy's going to have, you know, a much better year than a lot of people.
Well, I agree, because I think that, you know, he's a good enough tight end, and certainly the blocking's going to help, but, you know, he can catch the ball. And I mean, that's where, you know, of course, Bill Barnwell can't see this. We were able to see this, and you watched him in practice. I mean, mm-hmm. He caught the ball. I mean, he's a taller guy than you would expect. He's able to get downfield. I mean, he's a good football player, and so it's not going to be Jimmy Graham. He's not going to be the number two target, but he's going to be a guy that I think can help out and get that offense going.
All right, so John, Adrian Peterson, DeMarco Murray still out there. With all of this trouble, our boy Shady McCoy is in trouble here. Chance that maybe the Buffalo Bills sign him, one of those two guys. Either Peterson or Murray?
No, I don't think so. No, because they want to stay young, and you know, maybe Murray would be an option. You know, they'll have to they're sorting through all this. I mean, there's a lot of back and forth with the police, and of course, you know, the victim. You know, there's all Shady McCoy has hired a big Atlanta attorney, and you know, there's thoughts that maybe, you know, is she trying to set him up? And she's coming back and saying, no, he sent these guys to try to get it because they knew where everything was and had all the instructions. So it was a crazy, crazy scene. So I guess we just have to wait for the police. But if the police do make that charge on him, I have to think he's going to get the automatic 6-game, personal conduct penalty. And then they probably do have to go get a running back. But I think it would be Murray more than Peterson.
The story with LeSean McCoy is that a former girlfriend whom he lived with and has previously tried to evict from a house there, and according to her, has previously asked back for specific pieces of jewelry back. There was a home invasion robbery earlier this week. And I don't think the suspicion is that LeSean McCoy himself committed the
robbery. No, because he was out of town. He
right.
Was a different town.
That he may be connected in some way, which LeSean McCoy has denied. In this case, the NFL is probably going to have to wait until the criminal investigation concludes, right, John?
I don't know about that. I mean, they can take the automatic one like they did with like Greg Hardy and say, well, while we have these serious charges against you, we're just going to suspend you right now. Mm. I mean, they have the power to do that. I think that's totally unfair, because I still think you need more of the law of the land as opposed to, you know, the law of Roger Goodell. But they can do that. They have the power and the ability to do that.
That's one of the things that's here. Do you put him on leave and have him still be paid while it's investigated?
Remember, they did that with Adrian Peterson.
I believe they ended up doing that with Greg Hardy, too.
Yeah, Greg Hardy.
Yeah, where he was placed on leave while they investigated. You can levy a suspension while it's being investigated. The NFL has, the way it's handled previous allegations regarding this with Ezekiel Elliott and then most recently with Jameis Winston, I think a lot of people will be watching to see, does the NFL wait and see what the authorities find in the investigation? And if not, for the Bills and their team, Chris Ivory is also on that roster, mm-hmm. isn't he? So he would probably step up as the second most likely. I like to think of Chris Ivory as the former Cougs running back,
yeah.
Which is weird because he never did anything for him, right?
No, he played. Back. He played 1 year, I think.
Did he transfer to?
And then he went to Tiffin.
That's right.
A school with, where their mascot is the Dragons. He's been a pretty good NFL running back.
He really has. He's been to a Pro Bowl. I mean, you know, he's a powerful running back. I mean, he has a little bit of that Marshawn Lynch type of style, the way he runs. He runs furiously. It's just that now he's at that stage as he's getting older. He just has to bounce from team to team.
John, I like Tony Romo's pick. He was asked who's – here we are, John, in the middle of July, but I don't know, people are filling airspace and all that. So they asked Tony Romo who's going to make it to the Super Bowl, and he likes Jacksonville and Green Bay, John. So do I.
Do you? I mean, I honestly, but here's the problem I have, but there's a logic to it for both what you and Tony have. I mean, why would Green Bay do it? One reason, Aaron Rodgers. Okay, but here's the reason, and of course, what you look at Jacksonville, they have 8 Pro Bowl starters on defense, much like the Seahawks of last year. And a lot of those guys are young and getting better and better and better. They have Leonard Fournette, a running back that can get you over 1,000 yards. But here's the one thing I think prevents them from going to the Super Bowl, as it was last year. Blake Bortles. Okay, Blake Bortles had a pretty decent season. He stunned everybody. But can Blake Bortles beat Tom Brady? We've seen that he's been able to beat Ben Roethlisberger. I think they'll find a way to correct that this year. But can he go to Foxborough and beat Tom Brady? And
yes.
I say no.
Yeah, you know
yes,
what?
Yes, he can. Brady's 41
almost
this year. Yeah, he almost did last year, John.
Mm-hmm.
Don't tell Ben Gamble that, John.
Yeah, don't tell Ben Gamble then.
Yeah, he's a big Jaguar fan.
He is a big Jaguar.
Jacksonville
fan.
They got too conservative in that game, John.
Yeah, and why is that? Who is the quarterback?
Yeah.
Don't you game plan for the quarterback that you have?
Don't you think he's going to fall off this year though? At 41?
Not really. No. The concern that I would have for them is too many changes at the receiver position. You know, they have to go 4 games without Julian Edelman. You know, they don't have Danny Amendola and Brandon Cooks, and so they're much weaker at the wide receiver position, and that could be a problem. But still, it's Bill Belichick in an easy AFC. I mean, how many division games are you going to lose with Miami, Buffalo being there, and the New York Jets? So that's 5 or 6 wins right there. Usually they'll lose one game to the Jets or something like that on the road. But there's 5 wins there, and you know they'll probably have a higher seed than Jacksonville.
Jacksonville, they lost some receivers too, right? They did. Mm-hmm. They let go of one guy.
Yep, that's Allen Hurns.
And then they lost Allen Robinson,
mm-hmm.
who went to Chicago. Who's
are they going to? Marquise Lee is their main guy.
Former
right
USC
now.
Guy, like
and
a
so,
second
and
round
pick. I in fact, it was funny because I was on Jacksonville radio today, and I used the example. It's like now when you lose your top 2 guys or 2 of your top 3 guys, there's usually a big drop off. The next year. I mean, look what happened when DeSean Jackson and Pierre Garçon left Washington. And back in Cincinnati, there was a big drop-off for Andy Dalton when he lost Marvin Jones and Mohamed Sanu, 2 of their top 3 receivers.
You know what, though? They got Dede Westbrook, who I think was a rookie last year, mm-hmm. John. And they really liked him. And that dude almost ran me over down on the field.
Did he really?
Yeah, because, and they threw a ball to him. They were just, warming up, and it looked like he jumped like 5 feet in the air, really. And then Keelan Cole is another guy. So, yeah, they've still got – and I'm with the Jaguars. I really like that team, and they're kind of, built similarly to how the Seahawks were built. But, yeah, the Blake Bortles thing is really the only thing holding them back.
No, but I look at that defense and they've done a great job.
Oh,
now this
man.
Is the last year they can keep that together. Some of the guys are going to have to start breaking up because they're over the cap.
Yeah.
All right, Professor. We always appreciate it. Who you got unschooled this week?
Interesting. Former Seahawk Fred Jackson. Because here's Fred. Of course, he's in a big game this weekend, which of course you can catch on Saturday. I think at 4:00 on the NFL Network because it is in the Flag Football League. Is a flag football championship that's there. It's kind of thrown together, and what they're going to have is the semifinals. And so he's on the Ocho Cinco team, but he's taking on Godsped with Justin Fournette and several other players. And so the winner of that game advances to the championship, and in the championship game, it's $1 million winner-take-all, and you only have like 5 players.
Oh, and they split it up.
Yeah, and they split it up. And so he talks about that. He talks about his career, Marshawn Lynch's career. He talks about what it's like for running backs in the league right now, how it's changed since he's come in 2006, and what the expectations are for different teams running.
John, can you tell him that I'm driving a Dodge Charger, and it's a hot rod because
yeah.
I know that he likes to race cars.
Okay, yeah, there's an inside joke there. I know.
You can go to Rent and CDJR. I know. Pick up a nice Dodge Charger. Remember, you got in some trouble out there.
Well, I remember I was parked like like five cars behind when I was watching that poll. So well,
and you were in the, you're in the hood out there. They were racing in your neighborhood.
Well, yeah, that's true.
Yeah, so yeah. I remember that was like some big deal. Oh my God, you know, like, well, guys have been doing that. Moyer and I race out of the parking structure every weekend that we have a game down at the. I mean, that's just what football players do. You race a car. Except he crashed his.
He did.
Well,
he
yeah, but the bad part is the pole went all the way across the street and was still standing.
Oh, the light pole.
It was. He hit it. Yeah, we'll explain the mechanics of this.
He dislocated it.
He did. It's Danny David Moore. Professor, we appreciate your time.
Hey, thanks.
All right, if you missed any of the Cold Hard Facts brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light, you can download the podcast, 710sports.com right now. We do have Edwin Diaz is joining us next. But, yes, Fred Jackson's car hit a light pole, moved the light pole to the opposite side of the street across at least two lanes of traffic. It might have been fully three lanes. Thankfully, no one was coming there. And the pole was still vertical.
That's amazing.
At that point. Yeah, the sheer physics of it was astounding.
Try doing that again.
We got a closer. Edwin Diaz is on the line next.
This is Danny David Moore.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle Sports app.
It's a happy hour. It's brought to you by Heritage Distillings BSB. And we're in on a call from the bullpen. Usually we call to the bullpen. At least the manager does.
The bullpen's calling us.
Yeah, hopefully we'll talk to Edwin Diaz. And Jim just did some math.
I did the cross multiplication thing like I learned back there at Redmond Junior High.
How confident are you in your math that to say that okay. Edwin Diaz is on pace to set a record for saves?
Well, the save record is 62, as you pointed out, Francisco Rodriguez in 2008. And so we've been focused on the All-Star break record of 38 that Rodriguez also holds, and Edwin is at 36 right now. So, Danny, I took 36 saves over 93 games that the Mariners have played, and then X over 162, you cross-multiply, and I ended up with 62.5. So he's on pace to set the all-time record.
If he finishes with 62.5, it would be unusual.
It would.
If he got half a save.
Yes, it would. But he's on the better side of 62 and not the short end of it.
So we round up.
Yes, we round up because it's more like 62.6.
I was surprised looking at the record. So Francisco Rodriguez set the record in 2008. The previous record was 57, and that had stood for 18 years, which is the save's a relatively recent statistic. I think it came into vogue. It was created in like the 70s and kind of began to be measured significantly in the 80s when we saw the emergence of what is now the modern closer. For the Mariners, though, Edwin Diaz, the saves is very indicative of why they are where they are, because he has been an essential part of their success and his ability to lock down games late, whether it was a 3-0 win like last night or all the one-run games that they've won.
Boy, no one seems to even come close against him. You know, last night he just threw 10 fastballs, and Ohtani was overmatched there. Now Trout, and I forget, it was Simmons, I think, they flew out. But no, it's rare when anybody gets a hit off of him anymore.
I was really happy when he threw the high cheese to get Ohtani because I called that pitch. And it's not like I'm a pitching coach or anything. I'm like, throw him the high cheese inside. He got him.
There you go. We are joined now by Edwin Diaz, who did administer some of the high cheese. Edwin, first of all, congratulations on being an all-star.
Thank you, man. Well, hard on, you know, we deserve that.
The excitement that you must feel, have you had to get a lot of tickets for family members to go to Washington, D.C.?
Yeah, all my family, we go there and, you know, I spend some time with me over there.
Hey, Edwin, run us through the bet that you have with Scott Service. So what's the number of saves that you have to get to and fill everybody in on what he has to do if you get there?
You know, the bet was 56. He told me that, you know, first couple of days of the season, maybe first game, second game of the season. So he told me if you say 50 games, I will make your line, your haircut. I told him, let's do a deal. You know, now I got 36, so 40 more left, so it's getting close, and he will have to make the haircut.
Yeah. Well, will you provide him the barber? Do you have a barber to do it for him?
Yeah, I got the barber. I will bring my own barber to the field to make his haircut.
Well, how do you think he's going to look, Edwin? Will you feel sorry for him? Because that looks good on you.
Nah,
but
I don't. I would not feel sorry because, you know, he made the bet. I didn't come to him and I told him, hey, if I get 56, you made my line. So he came to me and told me that. I said, deal. So the day I get my 56, the next day I will bring my own barber. And he had to make the haircut in front of everybody.
Hey, a bet's a bet. There you go.
So, Edwin, you got your 36th save last night. It was a little unusual that you didn't throw a slider. You had 10 fastballs. Why'd you go with that strategy?
I don't know. I just was feeling good with my fastball. I got a good fastball command in the bullpen. So, you know, I attacked Otani first with the fastball, and I think he was late, you know, my fastball. And then Simon get quick out, one pitch out, and, you know, throw. I was feeling he was looking for my slider, so I threw fastballs. Hit it if you can. I was winning by 3 runs, so I can throw my fastball a little bit more.
We're talking to Edwin Diaz here on the Venue Kings Hotline. Edwin, one addition to the bullpen we've seen is Alex Colome. How have you guys gotten to know each other?
You know, I know him before. You know, we played together. You know, we face each other in the WBC, you know, in the season. You know, we was with Tampa, so, you know, every time when our players see other guys, you know, they say hello and other things. So I was knowing a little bit about him, you know, and when he got traded, you know, I started knowing more. You know, he's a great person, great player, and he helped us a lot in the bullpen.
Yeah, David Freitas yesterday, you know, working with Mike Zunino, Edwin, tell us what a catcher means to a pitcher, because we always hear about how good Mike Zunino is with calling pitches and things like that. But talk a little bit about your relationship with the catcher.
You know, I got a good relationship with all the catchers here. You know, with Chris, Davey, and Mike. I got good relation, you know. They know pretty much what I like to throw, so, you know, we don't bother much checking sign and everything, you know. They we are on the same page almost every time, so, you know, I got good relationship with them. I told them when I get to the mound, let's attack the hitter, and they know what I like to throw.
So Tuesday night when you're in Washington, D.C., Edwin, what do you think it's going to be like back in your hometown in Puerto Rico?
You know, I think everybody will be excited. You know, a lot of people follow me in my hometown. So, you know, I think they will follow me too. They will might get together, everybody over there, and try to see the game some point, somewhere. So I feel they're more excited than me, I think.
Who are you looking most forward to talking to or meeting when you get to the game?
I think everybody, you know, it's a special moment for me, you know, first of the game, so I will be over there with great players, you know. I will try to know each other and try to learn a little bit about each other.
It's hard to remember, Edwin, when you were starting pitcher coming up in the Mariners franchise, and Jerry DePoto, one of his moves when he got here was to make a move and have you become a reliever. It's really worked out well for you, man. It seems like being a closer really suits you.
You know, I like that move when they put me in reliever because they told me you can be in the big league soon. So I take it as a positive thing. And I started working hard as a reliever, start learning how a reliever works. And, you know, they made me a reliever, and then 3 weeks I was in the big league. So that was a good movement.
Edwin, I'm sure you've been on, you know, a lot of baseball teams and been on teams before, and you have good relationships with you know, with your teammates, but this one seems really special. You know, we saw the picture of you guys all out there in front of the airplane wearing the Gene Segura shirts and everything. It seems like you guys have something really special going on.
I think, you know, our team is a family. We are, you know, everybody's together every time, you know, we support each one. And I think our team, you know, I love my teammates because, you know, they support me anytime when I got bad out, you know, everything. I support them when, you know, when something didn't happen good. So, you know, I feel happy about everybody here, you know, because we are playing together. We are, you know, we are going together to make the playoffs. So I feel happy about my teammates.
Well, it's awesome to watch. Best of luck tonight in Los Angeles and when you head over to Colorado, and enjoy Washington, D.C. Edwin, congratulations on being an all-star, and thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, man. Thank you.
That is Edwin Diaz calling us from the bullpen. Well, he was actually probably in the clubhouse there. The Mariners getting set to take on the Angels in the finale for that series. Pregame show starts at 6, first pitch at 7:07. We sweep the dial, and that includes Charles Oakley getting arrested for cheating at a casino? We'll explain next.
Oh, holy cow. That's 4.5. That may have hit the warehouse, and they announce it did. That may have damaged the warehouse.
Ken, you said you couldn't hit the warehouse, but you did. You got all of that one, eh?
Yeah, wind blow. I wasn't thinking about it. I was just trying to get it up and out.
Ken, so modest. Of all the different things, the fact that he would insist that he didn't really have a home run swing and wasn't really a home run hitter, guy had unbelievable power. And he was a beautiful swing, and that home run derby where he hit the warehouse at Camden Yards. Camden Yards is a really cool park, and it started kind of the wave of Renaissance parks in my mind. It was a really cool thing when that happened.
You know, thinking about Trout and whether or not he can overtake Ken Griffey Jr., the one thing about Trout, I don't want to say his swing's ugly, but it's not as beautiful as Ken. Ken's was, to me, Griffey's was like, you know, I guess Kyle Seager has a really pretty swing, right? But I think that's part of it, because you see all the stuff that he did in the field. Maybe more athletic than Trout, you think? I don't know.
He's a more
it's
graceful.
It's pretty close.
Yeah, it's hard to say. They're different athletes.
More graceful, that's a good way of putting it.
Griffey's really graceful. Like, even when he ran and some of the catches he had, which were just like leaping and his arm hitting the wall, and he was much more graceful. Trout is like a spark plug. Like, he's little, compact. He's not little.
What is he, 6'2"?
Yeah, he's like 6'2", and weighs like 230. I mean, but he's built like a fullback when you see him. But they're both like, who's the more athletic? They're just different. They look differently as athletes.
Yeah, it was so funny. I mean, Danny, you mentioned, and people who were Mariner fans, I mean, he never thought he was a power hitter, and he had 630 home runs. And then you sit here and you think about how many home runs he would have hit if he wasn't injured there. When he got to Cincinnati and didn't have those full seasons, he would have been well over 700. But, yeah, that shot, everybody remembers. It was fun to look at the video again and see the excitement there at Camden Yards. And to this day, no one has done it in a game. No one has hit the warehouse in an actual game. And we keep waiting for a ball to go out of Safeco Field, because when they built it, they thought that someone would. And then whether it's the Marine Lair or they
just... Nelly's done it in batting practice, right?
I don't think so.
He did that 2 seasons ago in batting practice.
In batting practice.
Bruce took one out?
He did in BP. First guy to ever do it.
Are you sure?
Glenn Allen Hill had told people he did, but no one had ever, other than Glenn Allen Hill, had ever attested to have seen that happen. So Nelly was the first. Judge came close last year, and Trout came close last year and this year.
Zunino was 2 rows from the top.
Oh, I'm sorry, not Trout. That's what I meant, Zunino's. Zunino clobbered that one.
Wouldn't that be a bummer if somebody else came in here and hit it out?
Yeah, it would be a huge bummer. Although,
I'd like to see somebody do it.
If Trout did it, that might be kind of awesome.
Or Judge got into that one. Zunino's, if Zunino had a higher launch angle on this one he hit most recently, it might have happened, because that ball did not get very high.
Las Vegas casino on July 8th for trying to cheat during a game, casino officials told TMZ Sports. Oakley was arrested at the Cosmopolitan, a hotel on the Strip, on Sunday after allegedly trying to pull a $100 chip during a gambling session. It's unclear what game Oakley was playing, but Oakley was, quote, suspected of adding to or reducing his wager on a gambling game after the outcome was known. This according to the Nevada Gaming Board. Security tapes confirmed his intent to cheat.
Frankly, I'm disappointed in Oak. I knew Oak as the regulator, the man who was the upright authority when it came to debts, gambling obligations, and those sort of things, because he was the man who slapped Tyrone Hill over an unpaid dice debt. And here he is trying to futz with the chips after making a bet. Come on, Oak!
Yeah, that's weak. That's just really weak. And I'm reading here, if convicted of a first offense, a violator is subject to a sentence of 1 to 6 years in a state prison and a fine of no more than $10,000. I don't hope they throw the book at him, but maybe throw a paperback at him. That's just not cool. Yeah, you're trying to save $100. I mean, what an idiot, really, because they got cameras all over the place.
It's a bad place to try and cheat.
Yeah, you don't want to mess around with people. You know what's funny with the sentences, though? It's not funny. But it's not funny, ha-ha. But they'll say, like, 1 to 6 years. And, like, you hear, like, 6 years. And a $10,000 fine. Who cares about the 10 grand? Six, you're going to take away a year or 6 years from my life? My God. But I just, why would you... Maybe he's drunk, which is not an excuse. I mean, maybe he just wasn't thinking clearly. Who knows? But he's been in some trouble lately. Yeah, there was the thing with the owner.
Yeah, Jim Dolan. He was going after him and yelling at him and then hauled out by the security jackets there at Madison Square Garden. The costliest thing is going to be to Oak's reputation. The Oak, known as a strong, true tree, a voice for reason, and yeah, now he's cheating in the casinos.
Well, it's reached the point where a position player comes on to pitch, but rarely do you ever see that in the fourth inning of a ball game. Marquez takes Descalso out of here. A home run for the pitcher. And it's 19-1.
Are you glad that Daniel Descalso doesn't play for the Mariners? Can you imagine trying to say his name all the time?
Daniel Descalso?
Yeah, I'd have a hard time with that one. But the story is that the position players...
He pitched 2 2/3 innings.
They only gave up 3 runs.
It wasn't bad.
We have Mike Zanini and all. Is that how Danny pronounces
it?
Yeah,
that was... I managed to stumble over.
There was 2 position players, right?
Yeah, does anybody get sick of position players pitching? I think it's always fun.
I love it.
It is kind of fun. Well, what was it, 12-1 or 13-1 at that point? Game ended up having 19 runs in it, but yeah, for those two guys to come in, has that ever been done?
I can't remember seeing. I'm sure it's happened before.
I thought I heard Shannon saying last night something about how maybe it was the innings pitched or the fact that they went back to back or how early it was, but there's a lot of things that were really bizarre about this, and weird things tend to happen in Colorado. What is it? The final score was 18-1 or something.
18-1. Yeah.
19 runs in one game, and the Mariners have scored 14 in their last 5. Does that concern you at all, Danny?
Of course. They're going into the Rocky Mountain High, but maybe that's the perfect thing to get the Mariners' offense jump-started. We'll talk about what Seattle has to do tonight against the Angels, and then what happens when they go to Colorado. We got the starter laid out next. Christian Bergman going to be on the hill tomorrow. That wraps up Sweeping the Dial, which is brought to you by Specialty Insurance, and it also concludes the happy hour, which is brought to you by Heritage Distillings, BSB, their brown sugar bourbon. Coming up next, we'll look at what the Mariners need to do.